Welcome to the Ludic Insights podcast, where we go through all things that are maybe affecting digital and how we're relating to that and all the things we need to think about as we move into a digital age. My name is Garrick Jones, and I'm here with my fellow author, Paul Ashcroft.
Hello.
And we are the authors of Alive, Digital Humans and Their Organizations, available at all good bookshops and on Kindle and Amazon, wherever you may be digitally. Today, we are absolutely delighted to be joined by Stephen Caldwell from Impress the Examiner. Impress the Examiner is an amazing organization who are helping young people, GCSEs and A-levels, achieve phenomenal results in their exams by working through the schools and putting them through what can only be described as high-performance experiences. We're talking with Steve. Good morning, Steve.
Hello.
So we're delighted to have you here, Steve. Tell us a little bit about yourself and about Impress the Examiner and what you guys have been doing, and then I'm going to ask you how you do it, and then we're going to have a conversation about what the implications are for moving from physical education to online, digitally organized education, especially now in this crazy time in the world where we're all experiencing the impacts of the coronavirus. But let's over to you, Steve.
Great, thank you. So Impress the Examiner was an idea that my wife and I came up with just over 20 months ago. We knew that the best teams that we'd ever worked with in education had examiners and teachers who could teach children how to be the best they could in their run-up to the exams. But our twist was we felt there was an opportunity to actually attempt to teach children how to become their own examiners, for them to be able to self-edit as they're in the exam, knowing the rules of the game and understanding how to attract full marks. This whole concept validation went into three schools. Thankfully, the data set was incredibly good, and as of last week, we're now in 35 schools and enjoying supporting lots of children and lots of senior leaders.
Steve, that's amazing. Tell us some of the things that are different about your approach and what you're doing with your work.
I think the first thing is that the individuals who work for us are very experienced lead practitioners or senior leaders in education, who have a particular instant trust, high energy way of approaching children. The relationships are extraordinarily good very, very quickly. But all of this has to come from the practitioner being a true expert in their domain. So, for instance, we work in English, Maths and Science, GCSE. And if I give you an example from my own domain knowledge in English, we decided that there must be a better way of explaining to students what the examiner is thinking as the examiner is looking through their paper, which they've written in an hour and 45 minutes. So if I take one question, for example, the narrative question, we were toying with a different approach, which began with a dialogue between two people, moved to a flashback, and then we went through the various structural techniques of zoom in, zoom out, and crisis and resolution. Now, although variants of that may exist in classrooms across the country, the way in which we then took that and showed children that they could write less, craft more, and rather than writing four or five pages without much structure, in just a page and a half to 2 pages, students were coming away from our masterclasses having gone up at least 10, sometimes 15 marks in under 4 hours.
That must be at least a grade. Is that right?
That's correct.
And so I think what I heard you say, it really is about how you're working backwards, thinking about
yes,
what they're trying to achieve in the exam, but also focus. and focus. Have you got some other stories about how you get the students to focus in on what's going to be giving them the best result in exams?
Yeah, absolutely. So, for instance, I might be standing in front of, and members of my team might be standing sometimes in front of more than 17, which is the optimal kind of masterclass group. But recently we've been in Birmingham, standing in front of 65 students, and the performer, and I'll call them performers really, are using their bodies, using their tone, using the methodologies, and very interesting how we use stories and narratives to draw in and make sure the students are super attentive right from the outset, because they're following a particular journey. And we found that the use of storytelling enables us to help students to go on that deconstruction journey of what the examiner truly wants.
I'm really interested in this idea of the story and the visual. And how are you using storytelling and visualization or visual aids? I don't know what they are. How are you using the visual to reinforce this kind of learning, and how is it having an impact?
Okay, so I think we have to go back a few stages, if you don't mind. So at the outset, we were just using analog, some crafting of paper resources and pictures and typical resources with our own twist in order to tell those stories, in order to help students unlock the grades. But as we worked I got a team of senior examiners and individuals who were experts in the field of English initially, and we just thought there's room here for us to create huge A3 storyboards, for us to create in time moving animation that could be paused and show the different parts of that journey through the story of what it takes to get full marks.
And Steve, what is that impact on the student? What does that do for the student in that situation?
The impact last week at a school in Canning Town was that some students, and they deliberately chose students who weren't necessarily always that attentive, let's put it that way, and the fantastic feedback from the ringleader of the group of students was, "Your animation's good, man. Your animation." That's how he dropped it to me, and that was high praise, because they then asked to pause through. We had seven pauses on the screen, on a big screen. It was one of those screens that we could actually zoom in and focus on the text, which Andrew has put.
So you're getting them to engage with the subject matter in a way that they wouldn't have before, because of the narrative and because of the visualization, and it's engaging. Is that a thing because kids today are focused on media and just drenched in media, or is it something changed, or has it always been the way? Or,
I mean, there's a deliberate attempt for us to not ever have boring stuff in front of children. We've got to realise that the education system, unfortunately, is populated by extraordinarily dedicated individuals, but it's in crisis. I mean, you've got the stress and workload and disillusionment leading to, I think it was 40,000 teachers left the workforce last year, and a fifth of teachers plan to leave the profession within the next 2 years. So you've got a situation where teachers are trying their best to create a dynamic, interesting resource, but the students are living in a world where they are their expectation of what is good or even just normal is so much higher. We're trying to be slightly ahead of the catch up to with the students in a sense, and by attempting to create an EdTech digital product with animation at its center, we have been developing the best practice that we have seen, our core team has seen in schools, and adapting it so that it fits within a tech piece. I've had repeated emails from the head of English there who sat in for the whole day. This is CPD for schools. I mean, it might seem as if that's a crazy business idea to actually have the schools taking notes and using our resources, but we actually find that that deep collaboration leads to us becoming better and the school becoming better. In education, one of the most powerful ways, according to the Sutton Trust, of moving for children forward is good formative feedback. So what we're developing is ways in which the students are empowered, obviously, as examiners, because they understand the mark scheme by hour two, to go back and peer assess and actually make their own dents on their peers' work. So we have this method we use called DIRT.
So Steve, DIRT?
What's DIRT?
So DIRT stands for Dedicated Improvement and Reflection Time. Now,
improvement and reflection time. Okay, so again, it's the model around feedback.
Yes. Yeah, so for instance, you'll find the best classrooms around the country will use marking as planning. And instead of there being lots of ticks and useless marking, great departments and great teachers use it to feed into the next lesson. And the beginning of the lesson will be a DIRT 15 minutes. So our human-to-human product has students engaging with their own work after receiving very focused, very precise feedback that helps them to move forward.
At the end of one lesson and at the beginning of another lesson,
yeah,
is it a kind of segue tool as
yes.
well?
Yes.
So it allows continuity of the kind of story of the learning throughout the module.
Quite. And you've got it, Garrick, because too often there'll be this moving forward of classes when students haven't all got it. So this leads to a kind of disjuncture.
You're listening to The Alive, Digital Humans and Their Organizations podcast. Discover and download previous episodes on iTunes, Spotify, and all major podcast hosting sites. Search Ludic Insights.
This is fascinating, Steve. My question for you is, you achieve all these amazing results and you're shifting the grades of pupils for English. How is it working for maths and science? And then I have another question as well, yeah. which is, how are you going to move this online? Because if you have to deliver online with the schools closed and so on, how can you achieve the same results online? But let's start with the maths and science question.
Okay, so it's really interesting that when we first talked to Andrew about coming on board and creating animations with us.
Tell us a little bit more, who is Andrew and how does he work together with you?
Andrew Park is in my view, and certainly the curator of TED's view, the best living artist. He democratizes knowledge. We saw the RSA Animate series as a classroom. I showed it to my form. They were addicted instantly. They looked at this animated content and thought and said to me, "Sir, can we play this all the time?" 15 goes later with different content, I realized that we had to, my wife and I, create an animated product of some sort in education. We reached out to Andrew with our own very basic manga studio version. This piqued his interest, and 8 meetings later, he has worked with us not only on the first piece of animated content for our EdTech product, but he's now really a vital member of our core team in creating not just animated content for English, but also for the sciences and humanities. We have to have ways in which we re-explain old stuff. So I'll give you an example in maths now. The Babylonians, they had irregular shaped fields. They needed to find a way of taxing the populace. So the maths had to come. So telling the stories that underpin all of those incredible maths theorem and physics theorem, we're finding ways to engage students again through narrative.
So the storytelling and the visuals works even in a maths and science context.
Absolutely. As well. Yeah.
And then how do you take it online? If we have to deliver this, if we know what a classroom is and we know what an open space is where people can learn, but what if you've got a bunch of people dialing in from their laptops? How can you achieve the same levels of engagement and the same interest levels? What are your ideas about this, Steve?
We still know that there'll be a place for the teacher in the room to oversee what's going on with the students working with headphones on their laptops or in a computer suite. What we're developing is a way that the user journey is such that it doesn't need any other human contact, because we can create video content with really extraordinary performers who are examiners and super teachers, I'd say.
All very well trying to shift some of the education onto digital and onto tablets.
Yeah.
The exams are still paper-based.
Sure.
So how are you seeing that as a transition? I mean, we have seen even that the UK government is talking about taking GCSEs online in some way within the next few years, certainly. How are you seeing that transition where the exam system is encouraging or forcing us to be paper-based and traditional? The trend is towards digital.
You know, the product that we're developing now is effectively an hour a week of classroom time. So they will have plenty of time to be able to write up the kinds of things we're encouraging them to learn. But in the not too distant future, I know my 5 and 6 year old every day been really excited because our new iPad Pro with the pencil is arriving and they've seen the advert and they want to, you know, write all over it. I think we're moving to a situation where that kind of writing on screen will be possible.
What is the student's experience who is working online and learning online and who wants to get a great GCSE or A level result?
Well, I think currently there's a lot of content that is out there that is frankly a little bit static. And is according to lots of students, quite boring. So they will not necessarily go with a lot of the products that are out there at the moment, because the idea of these static pictures or fairly static animations combined with automated Quizlet-type content isn't really doing it for them.
So what is the stuff that is doing it for them, do you think?
Well, some
of
them.
What do we need more of?
Yeah, okay. So there are people like, and I'll mention them because they've influenced my thinking, Mr. Brough and Mr. Salas, who in English education have these YouTube channels which are extraordinarily useful, and students have been using them. But where we feel that students would most flourish is this very punchy, very clear, very concise way of expressing that which their teachers have helped them to understand in terms of the foundations. But we're trying to show them how that translates into the exam in a very clear and focused way.
So from what I'm hearing from you, there's great content provided by great people who can really tell the stories and land the content, and that might come in video format.
Yeah.
There's multiple channels where the student reinforces that learning by having those ideas put back to them, and their sort of games or answering questions in order to answer that. And then you say, and then it needs to be focused on the exam so that they know how to structure their thoughts and actually satisfy the exam requirements. And that way, that can all be done online, and that can be focused for a student's online experience.
What about for the teacher? Because again, there's an element of not just training the teacher, but we're introducing new methods, new technology for teachers to get to grips with, and then these change all the time as well. So
yeah,
what have you seen the impact on teachers? And also, what's been teachers' reaction to your companies' interventions with pupils?
The teachers' experience initially of us was we were being done to departments rather than this being a collaborative process. And that was a pretty tough learning curve for us because we never wanted to be in any way a replacement or this kind of swaggering brute that comes in and does it, seems to do it better. What we did was we made very clear this has to be a process where there's buy-in from the heads of subject. And we have not only the sharing of our resources, but we have NQTs, so newly qualified teachers or inexperienced members of the department allowed to sit in and potentially adopt some of our methodologies. So that was an interesting kind of learning journey over the last couple of years. But the online aspect, I think when we express this idea of students having an hour where they can be self-contained, they can look at animated content describing a particular way the examiner wants them to present their work, and then have automated questions, have the talking head of the examiner in video capture, and then go through a whole process of helping them to understand what success looks like and right. actually what it doesn't look like. The teacher listening to that is, why wouldn't we want that? You know, this is fantastic. So we're now working with teachers actively who are part of our customer base who are feeding into what they want the product to look like. And most importantly, I think the way in which this has to work in order for it to be truly the best it can be is that it feeds outwards into the normal classroom experience.
Give an example of that.
So, for instance, I went through a story where two girls are in a forest, barefoot, running away, and they have a dialogue which introduces the two central protagonists, and that moves to a flashback of a birthday party where mum is still alive. Unfortunately, it's revealed she isn't in the dialogue, and then it moves through a story. That story's been animated. That was then seen by 17 pupils and a very eager head of English. He then took that dialogue flashback, zoom in, zoom out, crisis resolution methodology, and he applied it immediately in an intervention for an hour after school. The students created along his storyline, which he'd made up during the course of the day. They are then sending me pictures of their work, and that work is feeding into workshops we then do. And more importantly, there are other students feeding into what's good and what's not so good about the exemplars that are being created.
Really powerful, the way that the two reinforce each other. I mean, I'm intrigued. What would be your advice to students who want to impress the examiner?
Okay. The biggest thing for me is that don't be afraid of the mark scheme. The mark scheme may seem like an impenetrable, boring tome, but if you can take having done your own practice paper under time conditions, if you can take that and maybe just take one of the shorter questions, it might just take you 10 minutes, and take that, look at the mark scheme, look at the exemplar that is in the mark scheme, the indicative content there, and then actually unpick it and take it then to your normal classroom teacher. And classroom teachers are just the most unsung heroes in society. They're the amount of work that we see is still going on from dedicated professionals. And if they see that you're taking that kind of interest, then that's a great revision tool. Actually, or if the teacher simply doesn't have the time to engage with you and help you with that particular revision strategy, form your own WhatsApp group, have a team up with people who are slightly better than you. And we found that these little groups are having extraordinary impact in revision.
Stephen, that's great. Really nice summary and lots of great advice for students and teachers in that process as well.
I'm really glad I've learned how to impress the examiner.
Stephen, thank you very much for speaking with us today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you so much, Stephen.
Thank you. It's been a delight. Thank you.
This has been another edition of Ludic Insights Podcast. Thank you for listening. Join us next time.
Thank you for listening to The Alive, Digital Humans and Their Organizations Podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast and explore previous episodes on iTunes, Spotify, and all major podcast hosting sites.